Welcome to Addressing Alaskans, a program capturing community conversations in South Central Alaska. Join us each week on KSKA as we travel to different spots throughout our community and listen to local groups gathered to discuss what matters to Alaskans. This week, we're at the Egan Civic and Convention Center, where Anchorage Mayor Dan Sullivan is addressing the Anchorage Chamber of Commerce at their weekly Make It Monday forum. Recorded on Monday, October 12th, Mayor Dan Sullivan on his first 100 days in office is coming up next on KSKA after the news.
Good afternoon. Welcome to today's Monday Make It Forum. My name is Tony Izzo. I'm the chair of the Anchorage Chamber of Commerce and a local Anchorage consultant and businessman. Earlier this summer, Mayor Dan Sullivan became the eighth mayor of the municipality of Anchorage. Along with his day-to-day responsibilities as the city's highest-ranking official, Mayor Sullivan also has taken on recent issues affecting Anchorage's residents and the local business community. These include South Central energy concerns and city spending. Now 3 months into office, Mayor Sullivan is here to give an update of his administration's upcoming priorities and outline 2010's proposed municipal budget. I'm sure many of you will have questions, which is why we have provided you with blank slips of paper at your table. During today's presentation, please jot down your questions, hold them up, wave them in the air for a staff member to come by and collect them for me, and we'll read as many as we can at the end of today's presentation. Let's get started. Mayor Dan Sullivan is a fourth-generation Alaskan and the third of nine children of Anchorage pioneers George and Margaret Sullivan. Mayor Sullivan received his BA in political science from the University of Oregon and became an Anchorage Assembly member in 1999. He was elected chair of the Anchorage Assembly in 2006, ending his tenure 2 years later. Mayor Sullivan is the founder and co-owner of McGinley's Pub in downtown Anchorage. Since 1986, he has also been a small business owner of Sullivan and Associates, a firm that specializes in government relations and business development consultancy. In 1996, Sullivan was the executive director of the Arctic Winter Games. He is also a 15-year member of Teamster Local 959, having spent 2 years working on the Trans-Alaska Pipeline. Mayor Sullivan's wife, Lynette, is an award-winning elementary school teacher in Anchorage. Today, Mayor Sullivan is here to give a review of his first 90 days in office, as well as give an overview of the city's six-year fiscal program to discuss key economic indicators for Anchorage, provide details on the 2010 proposed municipal budget, and the mayor's Energy Watch campaign. Ladies and gentlemen, please join me in welcoming Mayor Dan Sullivan.
Hey, good afternoon, everyone. Thank you for inviting me here today. It's a great honor to be at the Chamber. I think you see me oftentimes at the Chamber lunches over the years, mainly because it's just great to be amongst people who every single day have to make the kind of decisions that we're making right now in government, and that is balancing your budgets, providing good customer service, and when times are good and times are bad, making those strategic decisions that keep your business running. So I'm proud to be a Chamber member and real honored to be speaking here today and very much honored to be serving as your mayor. So thank you for that privilege. Typically, the mayor comes once a year and gives the State of the City address, and since we've only been in action for about 100 days, we thought we'd give you the first 100 days address. And it's been a real challenging time for city government. We literally, over the last 90 to 100 days, have had to prepare two city budgets. We came into office and found that the 2009 budget was still $8-9 million in deficit. So we literally had to meet with every department head and go through a complete planning process as if you were preparing a brand new budget. And so no sooner get done than trying to fix the hole in that budget than we started preparing for the 2010 budget. So really the staff has been working double time, and give them a great thanks for that. The staff, the executive staff of the city is at the front table here, and I'm gonna mention their names. They're going to stand up. If you give them a round when everybody's done, I sure appreciate it. We'll start with Cheryl Frasca, the budget director, who has been doing the yeoman's work on getting this budget prepared. Larry Baker, our policy director. George Vicalis, municipal manager. Lucinda Mahoney, our CFO. Greg Jones, the director of community and economic development. Stacey Schubert, our intergovernmental relations. Jay Jackson, Boards and Commissions, and Sarah Erkman, our Communications Director. Give them a round of applause, if you would, please. And I think you look over that group of executives, and for chamber members, there's not too many unfamiliar faces there, not only long-term members, but Stacy, former president of the chamber, Cheryl, former chair, George, former chair, as was mentioned. And so you've got just a very strong group of folks who are in tune with the business community and know how to make things work right. And so pleased they came back into city government to help me out, because you need good professional staff to make things happen, and they're the best. So thank you all for helping me out. The first 100 days has been interesting because, in addition to doing budgets, we've also just finished the Mayor's Diversity Month, which culminated in the Mayor's Unity Dinner, which was an interesting, month-long period where I got to go out into the community and really see what a diverse community we have. I got to welcome the first Hmong Lions Club in the United States, maybe the world. I got to welcome the Alpha Kappa Alphas and the Delta Theta Delta black professional sororities from around the country came to Anchorage. Got to open up the new Confucius Institute at the university. I've met with the consuls from Mexico, from Korea, from China, from Japan, from Canada. Just such a great experience to be able in just a few months to really get out and get in touch with the community, which sometimes as an ordinary citizen you don't get that opportunity to do. And so it's been very good from that regard. We're going to be speaking from slides today. So rather than a prepared speech, I thought I'd walk you through kind of how we got to where we are today. When you're hearing talks about budgets and deficit and cuts that we're making and how do we balance things, and it's been a process that's built first and foremost on what are your goals? What's the fiscal plan for the city? And typically every year the mayor is supposed to provide to the assembly a kind of a six-year forecast on just what it is you want to, first and foremost, we made the decision that when you talk about quality of life, that one of the things that makes up true quality of life is having discretionary income in your pocket and not in government's pocket. And that's going to be one of the ongoing philosophies, is that you make decisions better than government can make, and the more money you can keep in your wallet, then you have the money to make decisions on what you think quality of life is. We want to implement that by doing a couple things. We want to limit the increases in property taxes, certainly. And you'll see later in the budget where the proposed 2010 budget does have a slight uptick in property taxes, even though spending is going down, and we'll explain how that happens. We want to limit increases in utility rates. People sometimes forget that that's just another form of taxation. You're certainly getting good value in Anchorage for your utility rates, especially from our municipal light and power. But again, that doesn't mean you don't want to hold the line on those things. And certainly, you want to operate within your available revenues and maintain good bond ratings. Those are essential. Energy is a key topic, of course, and we'll be talking about that more at the end of the presentation. But certainly having the ability to have half the population of the state have stable, long-term, reliable energy supplies is key, and we'll be talking about that in a bit. Public safety, obviously, if you talk to any elected official, the first thing they're going to tell you is that providing a safe community is job number one. We saw some trends coming into the election and into office that we need to see reversed, including the violent crime rate in Anchorage. So we want to certainly see a reduction there. We want to maintain our ISO rating with the fire department. We want to respond timely to all the emergency calls we get. And we're working on the homeless inebriate problem. Again, that'll be towards the end of the proposal as well. Economic development. Obviously, I'm a business-friendly guy, and we're going to try and Cheryl gave me the signal. Move the thing along. See, that's why I got this staff here. This is good. And maximize our partnerships. ACVV and AEDC are sister organizations that are out there promoting Anchorage. We want to make sure that we stay good partners, knowing, of course, that in these challenging times, we're all affected a little bit. Transportation in our capital program, you're going to see over the next few years, we're going to really work on finishing the connectivity of Anchorage. We've got some key road projects in the design phase, and if we can get those finished over the next few years, we'll do a great job towards improving Anchorage's transportation flow. And in there, if you'll see the one bullet, we talk about increasing and improving the walkability of Anchorage as well, which we've done a good job starting to maintain trails and sidewalks in the winter, especially those that lead to schools and other public facilities, and we're going to keep up that as well. We want to be a more efficient workplace. We're going to be working on things like performance measures and looking to partner with the private sector on delivering services so that we can keep the cost of government down and still keep that service level up. And that is so important, is that even while we're making cuts, we want to make sure that we're not decreasing the services that we provide, and we think we can do both. Finally, community relations. It's just important to make sure we communicate, and that's why I mentioned at the start the opportunities that I've had already to get out there and interact with as many groups as possible. You find as mayor that you could literally schedule every half hour of every day and meet with a different group, an important group, and quite frankly, for the first 100 days, I think I've done just about that. So it's been very, very rewarding. Well, let's take a look at, how we got here. And this may be the most important slide of the whole presentation. What it shows is that over the last 10-year period, we were going along at a fairly flat rate of growth. And then about 6 years ago, look at that steep increase in spending. Now, the one thing about that increase in spending is you can look at it and say, gosh, we just were throwing money away. But, you know, we actually did some pretty good things in that spending curve. We increased about 90 police officers. We added a couple fire stations, I think over 40 firefighters. So there were things in there that, you know, people were grateful for and were willing to support. But as you'll see in the future slides, you may see that just proved to be a little bit too steep a growth and may not be sustainable going forward. So we want to make sure that, you know, as we prepare the budgets for the next few years, that we have that growth level off a little bit and actually come down. In fact, towards the last half of 2009, because of the cuts we made, that if we finished in that little grid there, it would actually come down a little bit because of our cuts. And then you can read the rest of the data there. You know, we had a population increase of about 4.5%, and we had, debt service increase. The voters were generous on different bond issues, so a lot of factors go into that. One of the things that we want to control, though, is this is seems to be where government spends its money, at the GovCo, where you get the highest prices and sometimes the least bang for your buck. And that's going to be one of our focuses, is we're going to try and shop better, do business better. And let's see. So key economic indicators. This is kind of what's guiding us going forward with our budgets. And these are some of the assumptions that you make when you prepare a budget. And you can always kind of question these assumptions and play around with the numbers a little bit. But we're pretty comfortable that these numbers are on target. We've had some folks take a look at it from the private sector, and we had one of our banking economists took a peek at it, and he said, yep, that's kind of what we're estimating as well. So gave us a little comfort that we're not too wildly off. We're looking at population growth slowing. Employment's trending down, hopefully stabilized next year or the year after. But I think we've all seen what's happened in the newspaper over the last few months, with the railroad dropping 20% of its workforce. Airport cargo traffic is down 18%, which means a job loss at the airport. And certainly we've seen announcements out of the oil patch that there'll probably be some job loss there as well. And, of course, then that ripples through because the support companies may not be able to keep the workforce up. We're probably seeing personal income drop a little bit. Assessed values of property, actually, for the first time in quite a while, we may see a drop. This year, 2009, it was anticipated we might see a drop in appraised values, but actually they held pretty level. But next year we might actually see that trend come into effect with a little bit of a drop. Tourism, I see Julie Soppy's here. Tourism numbers, I think we're on target with her estimates that we're probably going to see a continued decline in 2010 and maybe hopefully a nice slight uptick in 2011, 2012, and going forward, hopefully even bigger increases. Construction is down. We've had certainly residential construction over the last couple of years has been on the decline. We're starting to see commercial as well now start to hit that trend. So overall, if you've gone to the economic forecast lunches, Bill Popp is here from AEDC, and I think this remains consistent with his message that flat is good. You see so many places in the country right now where they would say thank you very much for flat, and so the bottom slide there pretty much says it all. We're looking at flat growth. and maybe some modest increases in the out years. Now, the next slide I'm going to show you really is going to emphasize the problem. This is what we call our gap chart, and the blue line is anticipated revenues through 2015. The red portion is the amount of money you would need to fill the gap if you spent at a continuation level over the next 5 years. And as you can see, if we made no changes whatsoever and just continued along the path that we're going on, you'd see gaps of $23 million, you'd have $31 million, $35 million, $35 million on out, so that every single year we're literally in major deficit. Not just a few million deficit, we're talking 20s to 30 million. So it became apparent that when we did this modeling that we had to take action sooner rather than later. The do-nothing environment really will not work. We don't want the city of Anchorage to go into, you know, bankruptcy like we're hearing rumors about with states and other cities out there. So what this assumed, and you can read the assumptions there, but that we really wouldn't do too much to the government structure. Models as well as on the revenue side that we tax to the tax cap every single year. So we're collecting as much tax revenue as you can possibly collect, and still you're in that deficit mode. It assumes about 2.5% inflation. Now, if inflation is higher, then you're going to see that gap get even bigger. But 2.5 was a kind of a nice average, comfortable number. I am a little concerned about that assumption because with the federal government printing money, that's oftentimes followed by an inflationary cycle. So if that 2.5% is underestimated by any great degree, that gap will actually grow even bigger. We're also predicting in the revenue side a decrease in state revenue sharing. The state revenue sharing is now tied to the price of oil, and there's a formula they've developed, and the predictions are that we'll actually see a decline in revenue sharing over the next few years. We're anticipating $15 million this year, and then I think the assumption goes 10, 5, and then down to zero. And again, we could get pleasantly surprised there. We hope so. But again, if we're unpleasantly surprised with inflation, then they're offset again. So as you go forward, you ask, okay, well, what's creating this big gap? Well, why can't we just cut expenses or just hold the line? This is the number one driver of the gap. This is the union labor increases based on the contracts that were passed right before the last administration left office. And as you can see, as you go out in each year, the numbers show how much is added to the cost of government every single year over and above the current cost of those contracts. And you know, in 2010, $13.5 million, almost $22 million, almost $31 million, $40 million, $44 and $45 added to the cost of government, totaling over $195 million through 2015, and there's just absolutely no way revenues can keep up with that. So it leaves you with some tough decisions, and if you've seen kind of the preliminary numbers we've put out there, and editorials are already starting to appear about, you know, protect my favorite program, but given that kind of rise in expenses, you really have to make some tough decisions. The other thing that that drives these numbers as well is, and it doesn't show in this graph, but the Police and Fire Retirement Fund, which was set up before we moved those employees into the PERS program, is about $140 million in deficit. And by the agreement in the program, the city has to pay 94% of that shortfall, which means about $12 million a year over the next 15 years or so. And that was one of the assumptions there at the bottom, see that P&F pension number. So another $72 million added on to that $195 million through 2015. And again, that creates that big red gap. So it's a problem. And when we came into office, we said, you know, we just can't let this go on. We don't want to be California. It's that's that great golden bear on the flag of California, and it's looking pretty lean these days. So no, we can't be California. So the plan we put together is called the Mayor's Plan, Take Action Now. And this is our plan to really take care of the deficit up front so we're not dealing with this problem every single year, going through these agonizing decisions every single year. And what it does is we're going to put together a program where in 2010 we're going to cut $20 million out of the budget. In 2011 we're going to cut another $25 million out of the budget. And by taking those two actions in 2010, 2011, you actually get to the point where you can have a controllable budget. And even though a couple of those years you might see that there's a little bit of a deficit, in year two of the program, we actually create a little bit of surplus, and that surplus will help get us through the next couple of years. But the good thing is that these numbers are manageable. You know, the other numbers I was showing you in the $35, $40 million range, those aren't manageable. You can't be going through that every year. So this plan basically says if we take the cuts up front, take the hard pain now, those savings carry forward every year thereafter if they're permanent savings. So if you do it now, you solve the problem going in the out years. And again, a little bit of a gap there, but it relies on some assumptions that we're hoping will maybe turn out to be a little bit better. This, again, assumes inflation at 2.5%. It assumes reduced government revenue sharing. We're going to be refinancing some debt, which is going to help us in the short term. And it assumes that there will be no new revenue sources like a sales tax because, quite frankly, at least what I'm hearing out there is that if folks did go for a sales tax, it would be to replace property tax dollar for dollar, not to add new revenue to city government. And I think it goes along with the general consensus that we hear out there is that people don't think we have a revenue problem. They think we have a spending problem. I agree. So let's take a look at this year's budget and the actual numbers. And again, won't want to overwhelm you too much with numbers. Really, the bottom line are the key numbers. The 2009 revised budget that they prepared in the first quarter of 2009, about $422.4 million. And then our budget proposal for 2010 is 420.6. So just about a $2 million drop in real spending. Probably one of the first times in many, many, many years you'll actually see a budget, state or city, that actually spends less than the year before. Now, one of the things that we'll look at as well is one of the things that the budget office did was to get to these numbers, they really kind of trued up various figures in the budget. We won't spend much time on this, but we just found that there were a number of assumptions made in the past budgets that just never came to be. And in some cases, we're looking at things that we know for sure, like we're probably not going to collect as much in court fines and fees. One of the reasons, permanent funds down. Amazingly enough, one of our sources of revenue from this is garnishing people's permanent funds, which sounds cruel and unreasonable, but when they owe you money, you go for the sources of revenue. And when their permanent fund is down, then quite frankly, our collections are down. We're certainly anticipating that our trust fund will not generate as much money, mainly because the Assembly, in a prudent move, changed the formula. Instead of getting 5% a year from our trust fund, they changed it statutorily, so we're now going to collect 4%, help preserve the corpus of the fund. So that was a good move on their part. And then we got some stimulus money last year that we're not thinking we're going to get that we can use for general services this year. So, and then you can see the other assumptions. Room tax will be down. Other things are down. So if you look at how that all totals out, you'll see that from non-property tax sources, we are going to be collecting, $7.5, $8 million less than the year before. So one of the things that people asked was, what happens if you did absolutely nothing? You know, we showed that chart before, and this is how much we'd spend on government if we just continued the way we're going, about $451 million. So we're spending about $420, almost a $30 million reduction in continuation spending, and then a real decrease in spending from last year. This just gives you a quick chart of where do you reduce? Salary and benefits, 55% of the whole budget. You can see the other numbers. So you can see that really the employee costs are the number one cost of government. What we did to get to where we are today with the budget is we really work cooperatively with our department heads. We've got great professionals in all of our departments, and they've been at this a long time. Most of them have been through this cycle before. If you remember, late 1999, 2000 time frame, and again in 2003, there were some budget challenges. And so we asked them to do two things. We asked them to absorb the increases in labor in their departments, and then we asked them to prepare scenarios of what if they had to cut 3%, what if they had to cut 5%, what if they had to cut 7%. And we then took those proposals that they gave us, met with each department one-on-one, and then we had some give and take. And in a lot of cases, we didn't take their proposed cuts. In other cases, we did. So it ended up being a pretty good balance. And one of the things we wanted to do was make sure that we prioritized what we felt were the top priorities of the city, and I think we did that. So again, just to give you that picture comparison again, you can see that had we just gone along the way we were doing, we'd be spending about $451 million. We're proposing about $420 million, and so about a $30 million reduction in the continuation. And then you can see where we took the savings as well. And then just to finish up with too many numbers, if everybody's glazing over, I apologize. But again, then the real changes, the real numbers, again, almost a $2 million drop in real spending. One of the questions that gets asked a lot is, okay, what does this mean to employees? Does this mean you're laying people off? And the answer is, quite frankly, yes, we are laying people off. The number of employee reductions are based on two things. I'd say of the 192 that you see here at the end, I think about 59 or 60 are actual positions that are filled today. In other words, those are people who are indeed going to be losing their jobs. The others are positions that have been budgeted for but not filled. And in some cases, they haven't been filled for a year or two, so the expectation was, at least in our budget planning, that they probably weren't likely to get filled. And certainly for budget purposes, eliminating them from the budget saves us money. And again, if they were going to be filled, it means maybe some less service in an area. But the main question that's always asked is how many people are losing their jobs. And again, our guesstimate, it's a changing number because you're getting retirements every day and different changes in personnel, but probably about 59 or 60 people. So as we made these choices, we again had to go back to our original assumptions. What was our policy? What did we want to maintain as a core service of the city? And so we were able to identify our priorities and focus first on the fire department. We wanted to make sure that we maintained our response times. And then the key indicator here, or the key, I guess, change, I guess, that certainly I think the public appreciates and the fire department as well, because they take their jobs very seriously, is we've eliminated the rolling closures as of January 1st. And there were some misconceptions about what a rolling closure really is. People think sometimes that means a whole station is closed down. Each station has multiple pieces of apparatus. You got trucks and engine companies and ladder companies and pumpers. And so when we have a rolling closure, it means an apparatus at a station is closed that day, and maybe six personnel that go with that apparatus didn't work that day. It doesn't mean a station closed down. So there really was a minimal, in our opinion, loss of service. But again, because public safety is job number one, we restored the funding so that the rolling closures will end. In the police department, there are some cuts in the police department, but we've identified mostly kind of the mid-management. They're sworn officers, but they're not the people really on the front lines out there, patrolling the streets of Anchorage and investigating the crimes at that level. So we felt comfortable with those choices as well. And again, this is an area where you work very cooperatively with your fire chief and your police chief, and you make sure that they feel satisfied that the cuts that are being made are manageable and do not compromise public safety. And then finally, of course, street maintenance. We live in a winter city for 6, 7, 8 months of the year sometimes, and we've made our commitment that we're going to maintain all the streets clear by 72 hours. So we think we really kept our core services intact, and that was our goal. And again, this is, you're going to hear from folks, and we expect that the assembly meeting's coming up, there's public hearings on the budget, that we'll start hearing from groups who did see some reductions. Libraries, for example, are going to see reductions in hours. We wanted to maintain at least the main library being open 7 days a week, and we did that. You'll see some hours changed in rec centers. You're going to see some changes in horticulture and other departments. But again, when you've got to cut $20 million 1 year and next year go through this again for another $25 million, things get cut, and that's just it's just the bottom line. And again, if we had not had that growth in spending personnel and expensive personnel, we wouldn't be here today, but we've got to deal with it. So the bottom line, this is our final analysis, was that we've got a budget that's $2 million lower. We're covering over $24 million in increases. We're preserving our traditional responsibilities to our citizens. And then under the revenue side, we are under the tax cap. One of the reasons that we're under the tax cap is that, sometimes government tends to look at itself a little isolated, and people say, well, gee, you could spend more tax money. Well, hey, the casual citizen out there is hurting just like government is, and, it's hard enough to cover your existing taxes sometimes, yet less tax to the tax cap and have another 10% increase. So we've tried to keep that as modest as possible. And again, realistic projections of other revenues, and we're going to work on even more debt refinancing so that we can save in the short term. Finally, we're going to recover because Anchorage is a very strong city. We've got a lot going for us, and I think one of the keys is to sometimes get rid of the sandbags at the bottom there that kind of hold back the economic recovery. And there was a great debate on TV a couple days ago, and the guy who owns, Mr. Wynn, that owns casinos in Las Vegas and everything, one of America's richest guys, and He was putting forth his version of what the stimulus should do. And here's a guy who employs 20,000 people and has businesses all over the country. And he was absolutely adamant from his many years of experience that if you want to stimulate the economy, you don't raise taxes on people and you don't print money. And I think he's absolutely right. So I think you see reflected in our budget that same sort of philosophy. We're going to hold the line on government spending, keep money in your pocket, and hopefully that'll help stimulate the Anchorage economy. So coming up next, you've got a whole series of work sessions and public hearings, and you're welcome to come on out and testify. You get 3 minutes to tell us your opinion. And, of course, emails, go to muni.org, and you can certainly communicate with us that way as well. So much for budget, and again, I'm sure I'll get some questions about it, and I'll hopefully leave some time for that. The other thing we've been working on, we've been working literally from day one when we got into office, is we were surprised when we got into office that there was not a more comprehensive emergency energy plan, given the fact that two of the last 3 years, the natural gas system in South Central Alaska had come close to failure. And it's not a failure because of a lack of gas. There probably is adequate supply. It's all about pressure. And when you get 2 weeks of 10, 15 below zero weather, that pressure starts falling, and the ability to maintain the system comes into jeopardy. So one of the things we did was we immediately went to work with our task force. We have an energy task force chaired by Judy Brady, who's in the audience. Your chair, Tony Izzo, is a member of the team. There's several others, I think, in the audience. And they made both short-term and long-term recommendations to us. And the short-term one that we immediately followed up on was we need to have a comprehensive emergency plan. So we appointed our municipal manager, George Vakalis, to lead that effort. He has met with every utility, every producer, every major user of energy in this city to work on a campaign whereby we can not only deal with the crisis if it happens, but more importantly, prevent a crisis. Now, do we think there will be a crisis? Probably not. We got a good system and a lot of smart people working it, but you got to be prepared, judging by what happened two of the last 3 winters. So what we've done is put together the Energy Watch campaign, and this will be distributed widely throughout utility bills. We'll have PSAs going. And what it does is it gives you a quick stoplight look at what you can do to help the problem, because the number one solution on a short-term basis is conservation. We all saw when the power lines went out in Juneau last year from a snowslide, and they had to all of a sudden start paying, I think, 50 cents a kilowatt instead of a nickel. Boy, did conservation set in quick in Juneau. 40% drop in usage because they were forced to. Well, we don't want to get to the point where we're forced to. We'd like to have our citizens engaged enough and informed enough where we could put a plan into effect on a short notice that drops our consumption immediately, so that if we do get into a situation where we're worried about pressure, we can take a big load off that system. As you can read through that, that may be a little bit small print, but I think there's some you'll be getting in your utility bills. But essentially what it says is that, green is stable. Everything's going pretty good. Yellow is a cautionary note. If you get a yellow alert, we want people to set their thermostats to 65. You want to lower your water heater setting. Minimize the use of natural gas cooking. Postpone doing laundry and dishes. And turn off unnecessary lights and electronics. Seems like pretty simple stuff. Amazing what happens when you don't do, if the whole town on one given day decided not to use their dishwasher, you'd be amazed at the drop in the load. And on that note, what we're going to do is on October 21st from 6 to 8 p.m., we're going to do a citywide test, and we're going to ask residents to do just that. If everybody on that two-hour period does these things, turns your lights down, maybe sets the thermostat down, do not use any of your major electrical appliances, and we'll see just what that really means to the overall distribution load out there, and I think we'll be amazed at what we discover. Clearly, if we get into the red alert area, that's much more serious. That means the experts out there in the utility world are telling us, holy cow, we're a little bit worried, and so we're going to ask people to do even more, which means the thermostat goes lower. It means you don't use your fireplace, and this is in addition to the other things you might be doing. And again, use your microwave for cooking. I mean, all these things that to take the load off that natural gas system. So you'll be hearing more about this going forward, certainly about October 21st coming up for the test. One of the other issues we've been working, you've heard about, is we want to deal with the chronic public inebriate problem under the homelessness general umbrella issue, of which there's a lot of agencies working. But when we came into office, again, kind of like with energy, we found a lot of very good groups nibbling at this problem, but really no cohesive, unified effort under the direction of the city. And we think it needs to come from the direction of the city because, quite frankly, it's become a public safety problem. And if public safety is our number one goal, then we need to address it with us being the leaders. And with public safety, there's two elements to it. Number one, there were 12 deaths between spring and fall in the homeless public inebriate population. I mean, that's really unacceptable to have that kind of death rate within that population, plus violence against that population from people outside and violence within that population. So it clearly is a public safety issue. We met with the head of the substance abuse program for the federal government a couple of weeks ago, and he had no idea about these statistics. And he said in the federal world, that's considered a crisis when you have that kind of a death amongst that population, given the number of participants in that population. So he was alarmed that they hadn't been contacted, but now that he is in the loop, they're going to offer their assistance as well. But it's also a public safety issue because this population also impacts all of us, whether they're on the street corner soliciting or wandering in out of traffic or co-opting your neighborhood parks or co-opting your trails. You know, when we have people who are afraid to go to a park because they're worried about who's lurking in the woods or afraid to use a bike trail because you're not sure who you're going to encounter, then that's a problem the city has to deal with. So we're looking at, you know, all the various options. Detox and treatment certainly is a first step. We've got to get people into a different environment when they get out of detox. And we've got some good people on the team. Diane Engle, head of our Health and Human Services Division, under her direction, a gentleman named Daryl Hess, who used to be head of the Fairview Community Council, worked for the city for the last couple of years, a get-done kind of guy. He'll be the point person on this project. And hopefully we'll be able to report back to you in a few months or in a year or so that we've got some real results. This is one of those things where we don't think we're going to solve the problem. I don't think you're ever going to solve the problem. But we just have to do a better job of what we're dealing with, and we're committed to doing that. The final thing is we are in the final weeks of our search for a new police chief. Chief Hewen retired August 15th, and we are we conducted really a nationwide search, and we've narrowed it down, I think, to about 5 applicants. I have not even seen the names yet because I appointed a committee to kind of remove that from being a political decision, at least at the early stages, and just have them go through resumes and background checks and philosophies and achievements and narrow it down to those 4 or 5 top candidates, and then I'll start interviewing them personally myself, and hopefully within a few weeks we'll have a new announcement about a new chief of police. And we're going to want someone who really understands the value of community policing, who can get out there and really make a change in our neighborhoods and a change in those violent crime rates that we talked about at the start of the program. So we're committed to that. And with that, I'll just finish up by saying, again, you know, you hear a presentation like this, and we clearly have a lot of challenges, but as I usually say at the start of a proposal or a presentation, this time I saved it for the end, it is still a great day to be in Anchorage, Alaska. Thank you very much. And I think Tony's got some questions.
Yes, sir. Thank you, Mayor Sullivan. Now for some questions from membership. We have quite a few. If you haven't done so already and would like to, please write down your questions on the slip of paper and we'll try to get to them. We have a number of questions, different categories, starting with the budget. And the first question, Mr. Mayor, is if the budget projections are realized or if the city is in the red at the end of the year, how is the deficit paid for and does the city borrow to cover the cost of operations?
Actually, the city budget has to balance. There is no deficit at the end of the year. So you do whatever steps it takes to make sure that your revenues and your expenditures balance at the end of the year. Sometimes in past administrations, they've actually dipped into the fund balances. We have various categories where we keep reserve funds. Some of it's maintained so that we maintain our high bond rating. Some of it is emergency designation, just in case you have a catastrophe and you need funds to cover it. In the past, those have been dipped into, but that's a horrible policy to use. It's one-time money, and it doesn't solve your problem. So our goal is that there will be no deficit at the end of every year, and again, that's required.
Thank you. We have a number of questions. I'll attempt to summarize these into one. And generally, could you comment on the school district budget, which has been mentioned is twice the size of the city budget? Not sure if that's true, but that's part of the question. So could you comment on that budget? And are we experiencing some of the same problems as the Muni? And how do we get the same type of fiscal constraint applied there?
That's a great question. We're working cooperatively with the school district. They've already done supportive thing for our budget. They're going to take over through the end of the year about half the cost of the COPS in Schools program, the school resource officers. And then we're talking about next year maybe them taking over half the cost or maybe even the full cost, which is estimated about half is about $1.2 to $1.4 million. So if they took over the full year's cost, $2.4 to $2.8 million. Depending on how many officers in overtime and stuff. So that would be a big help. Obviously, that's almost $2.5 million less that we would have to spend to support that same program. We're also talking with them about consolidating our IT functions. And when it comes time to actually doing the mill rate and apportioning property tax, we do have the option, the Assembly does, of allocating a little bit more for the city and a little bit less for the school district. And that would actually force savings onto the school district, but we hope not to do it, by a forceful method, but by a good cooperative method. And so far, the district recognizes that our part of the budget is in imbalance. Their part of the budget, because of monies they've received, stimulus monies and others, is probably in better shape than ours, and we should probably share in the pain a little bit.
Next question. Again, a summary of a couple of them here, but Mr. Mayor, please share your thoughts on a summer sales tax to increase municipal revenue?
Any sales tax takes a 60% vote of the people. So how do you sell 60% out there? I mean, there's such a high hurdle. I mean, I only got 57%. I don't know how you get to 60. So it's it's a tough hurdle. And so if you, made the case out there that a seasonal sales tax, you'd be drawing mostly from visitors and seasonal workers, maybe that would have more cachet with the voters. I don't know. But again, what I heard on the campaign trail was loud and clear, and that is if there's any sort of a sales tax, they want it to replace property tax dollar for dollar, not as a new revenue source. Because again, I think what people are perceiving out there is that we don't have a revenue problem, we have a spending problem.
Next question, could you mandate employees and particular unions to go to a 37.5-hour work week?
Unfortunately, you can't mandate those things. The only people you can mandate are your executives who already took a 5% pay cut coming into office, and we kind of like to see the other employee groups follow that lead and join in. And a 37.5-hour work week actually would have been comparable to that. I think it would have been about a 6% savings over the cost of their labor. But no, the contractual agreements are written so that that's a negotiated item, and you'd have to get their compliance to do that. If I could have mandated it, I think I would have. That would have been, a good, easy solution to a lot of the problem.
Mayor Sullivan, please comment on your support for senior citizens in our community. Thank you.
Well, I think according to the AARP, I am a senior citizen, so it's a... I see. Enough said, right? It's a growing concern because we're an aging population. It was just 20 years ago we were one of the youngest states in the country, and it's amazing how that demographic has switched. One of the reasons being that our seniors aren't leaving the state like they used to. You'd often find at retirement time people would leave, but Alaska has proven because of its overall tax structure and obviously home is where your friends are, but people just aren't leaving like they used to, and of course the baby boomer generation is aging. So something we deal with, we've got any number of programs out there to help seniors. Certainly the property tax exemption is a very popular one, $170,000 off the assessed value of your home. So it's with our senior centers, we've got the Chugach and the Anchorage Senior Centers, and we support those facilities. You'll see more legislation, I think, on the state and federal level dealing with the senior population, and certainly health care comes into that debate. But I think overall Anchorage has been a great place for seniors and will continue to be.
And we have time for one more. What is your stand on advancing the connection of the Coastal Trail?
I oppose it. I'll tell you why. There was a couple problems with it. I love our trail system. We have a world-class trail system, but quite frankly, it's in disrepair in many, many sections. And if you're not fixing the trails you have now, why would you build another 20 miles of trail? Our administration is going to be focusing on fixing the assets we own now before we do much expansion. I'd like to actually see down the road, a few years down the road, where we look at more expansion of some of our facilities. But again, your number one responsibility as a municipality when you build something, you got to maintain it, and we're behind.
Once again, yes, please help me all to thank today's speaker, Mayor Dan Sullivan.
You've been listening to Addressing Alaskans on KSKA. This week, we heard Anchorage Mayor Dan Sullivan speaking on his first 100 days in office. You can find a link to his slideshow presentation on our website at kska.org. Mayor Dan Sullivan was recorded addressing the Anchorage Chamber of Commerce at their weekly Make It Monday forum this past Monday, October 12, 2009. You can download today's program or subscribe to free podcasts of Addressing Alaskans on our website at kska.org, where you can also find links to all of the local groups featured on the show each week. To let us know about an upcoming community event that you would like to hear on Addressing Alaskans, just go to kska.org and click on Contact Us at the bottom of the page. This has been a production of KSKA Public Radio in Anchorage, Alaska. For KSKA, I'm Kristen Spack. Thanks for listening.